Hi, and thanks for watching this video. I'm Andy Sterland. I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio Tools team, focusing on HTML and JavaScript, and I work on the developer tools in the Edge browser. Today, we're going to be taking a look at instrumenting your code for profiling using the Edge developer tools. I've got a set of a few demos here to really show you how you can use the tools, and as well as some APIs in the browser platform, the web platform, that allow you to capture information about your application as it runs in the wild, so that you can be a better and more effective profiler. The first demo we've got is really using the console, specifically console.time, to do some quick and dirty measuring. So taking the start time of some function, taking it to another point in your code, and timing the difference. Then we'll look at some APIs that are available, performance.mark, performance.measure, for how you can instrument your application to define scenarios that you can collect in the wild, as well as how you can use that information locally to profile traces. And lastly, we'll finish up looking at the memory tool and how you can use the memory tool in conjunction with some APIs from the console to get accurate memory collection at the right time in your application. So let's take a look at the first demo. Okay, so in this first demo, I'm going to show you an example using console.time. I've got a really simple application here, and the purpose of this demo is really just to give you a flavor for how to use the feature so that you can go away and use the feature in your day job and the pages you debug and stuff like that. So the example obviously is a bit contrived. It's not terribly complicated, and I don't think many people are going to debug this. So we're just going to load up the tools to get started. Now, one handy hint about the tools is you can use the Control plus keys to zoom in just like you would your web browser. So if in like this example, you want to see some bigger text, Control plus to zoom in, Control minus to zoom out, and then Control zero to get you back to 100. So just like zooming in the browser. So hopefully this makes the text a bit clearer. So the value of console.time is really that it's used to replace something you've probably done already. Like I'm sure in your applications at some point you've done something like this. You've got start date, which of course you've taken a new date, and then you have some code that executes. Then later on, you take the new date and you take the old date. And that gives you the time in milliseconds that happened between here and here. So you know, using the date object, it's a good place to start. The date object is milliseconds since the 1970 January the 1st, so the epoch. And of course, subtracting you gives you the time in milliseconds between the two. The downside of this approach is that you've got some code, obviously, you've got to have some state. You know, you've got to store these variables somewhere, you've got to pass them around, things like that, which is a bit inconvenient. And of course, it's also only accurate to 1 millisecond, which might sound like a lot to me and you, and certainly in human times, that's an awful lot. But for a computer, at 60 hertz and 60 frames per second is what you want to keep your app at, you only have 16 or so milliseconds to deal with for every frame. So instead, to make this even easier, there's an API that all the modern browsers implement called console.time. And in console.time, you pass in a label, and then you call time end, and you pass in another label, and it measures the time between them. So looking at my application, I've got a busy work function that just basically generates a random string. So it's not even that super useful. And what I've done is I've set the console.time before the start of the function, before the start of the code rather, and then at the end. Now it's important to note that even though in this example, it's all in one function in a click handler, these two events, these two points of code could be separated across any distance. They could be in different event handlers, they could be in timers or whatever. They just can't be across refresh. You must use these functions, or these labels inside a page navigation. Once you navigate your page, all that data is lost, so you can't use it. Okay, so the function is really simple. I'm just gonna press go console time, which executes this, and then look over in my console. And unsurprisingly, you can see the name of the we gave, which was just example, pretty original, I think, along with a time in milliseconds. You'll note that it's sub-milliseconds. In fact, this function's accurate to 1,000th of a millisecond, so it's a high-precision timer. And again, you can keep measuring it. Interestingly enough, in this particular example, it gets faster after the first iteration, as the runtime engine Chakra has had time to optimize and compile that code. But there's one other important note when you do profile your code that's worth keeping in mind. In this scenario, I've still got the debugger attached. Really, I want to detach the debugger, since debugging has an overhead for applications. You know, the debugger obviously has to listen to events, subscribe to notifications, things like that, and also de-optimizes things like exception handling and whatnot inside your application. So I'm going to disconnect that debugger just using this toggle here, the debugger toggle. And now when I use the function, it might have slightly different performance characteristics. You can see it's dropped slightly. In this case, that was pretty insignificant, but in general, turn off the debugger when you disconnect the debugger when you want to profile. And that's good advice The tools, if you use the performance tool or memory tool, they'll do that for you. The other thing that's nice about console.time and timeend is because it's just taking a string as a label, as the name of the function, you can, of course, provide dynamically generated functions, names. So in this case, I've got a nested console. And since the console time and timeend is just paired on the label, you can, of course, have as many of them as open as you want, so long as the labels are different. And here, as you can see, it's logs 100 console messages. Not the most useful thing, but I'm sure you can appreciate that in your scenarios with a more complicated application, that could be much more useful. So there's a simple example of using an API, console.time, and console.timeend to replace something you probably already do. So in this demo, we're going to be looking at two functions, performance.mark and performance.measure, that have existed since, I think IE 10 in the Windows platform and for a while in other platforms. For those of you who are not familiar, the performance is a standard object implemented in most of the browsers. And if you look at it, just in the console for the sake of argument, you'll find there's all sorts of interesting data. So that's the first interesting thing here is window.performance, just performance off the window object, has, I guess, two real sets of data. One is around timings for things that relate to the web platform. So in this example, you can see I've expanded the object in the console, and I've got a bunch of numbers, times, for various important dates or important marks in your application's lifecycle, such as when the connection started, domain lookup, DOM content loaded, DOM interactive. So obviously, this is important milestones. So when you're building your application, you know, you might be very curious to know when DOM content loaded is finished, because that's the point in your application that perhaps a user is ready to interact with it. Or for an app that's meant for consumption, you might want to use the first paint, which is essentially time to glass. You know, the time that it comes to render that first real big frame from the engine. And so this is interesting data that you can collect and you can upload to your backend. So if you had like an analytics engine, perhaps they already used this. But if not, you can certainly roll your own and serialize this to a JSON object and, you know, XHR it up. On top of that, you know, that's really good for static applications, for applications that are just, you know, like displaying content. If you have a long run application, like, you know, a single page application, or something that has lots of rich interactive JavaScript, like you display a complicated form or a grid, that information isn't that useful because it's only relevant at the start. And that's where performance.mark and performance.measure come in. So performance.mark is an API where you pass in a label, a name, essentially. And it allows you to annotate code. So I have an example here where you can see that what I've got is I've got a mark at the start before I invoke a function. So this is an example of a scenario. So in this case, it's a single function that's generating a string. But for your scenario, it could be someone writing an email, calculating something, displaying a form, whatever it is. And then you put it at something at the start, and then you put performance.mark at the end. And that provides two points in time that are incredibly important for you, like it provides the start and end of a scenario. And if you wanted to, you can then get access to these from the console or from the page, because normally you'd have your code access this and you wouldn't do it from the console, that's a bit balmy. And window.performance, and you can see, of course, that if I run this code and then evaluate it again so we get the up-to-date data, and if I go to the timing, you'll see user functions. Let me make sure it appears. Let me just evaluate that. Oh, I forgot. Sorry. Window.performance, you've got to call a function called getMarks. So let's just call that. My bad. It's not off the performance object. I know what I was thinking. GetMarks. There you go. And of course, this returns an object table with the name of your marks and an array for the value of each one. Well, so you could go away and use these to annotate or, you know, provide data to your backend. But that's not the most useful thing. Probably a more useful scenario is you measure the time between two things. Because most of the time, you're probably looking to say that this particular action or this scenario takes X seconds, milliseconds, etc. So to do that, that's where this API performance.measure comes in. And you pass in a name for the measure, the name of your scenario, essentially. You pass in a mark that represents when the scenario should start. And then you pass in this, a mark for when you represent the scenario should finish. And then lastly, you call get measures on your page to see that. So for here, for example, if I go back to the console, do performance.getMeasures, you can see that I've already pressed the button twice. So for each of the labels, I've got this thing here called iteration-based calculation, and it's got two values. And this is a value in milliseconds and sub-milliseconds of that particular scenario. So you can do a scenario thousands or however many times, it doesn't matter. You just annotate your code once and this data will be collected. And then you can just, you know, serialize this to JSON. Pretty simple, like you'd obviously do this from your code, not the console. And so if we do json.stringify, and then if we do performance.getMeasures, we want this one here, thank you, and autocomplete, save my life. You can see you've got a string that you can of course upload to something and track. And that would give you a KPI. And there's some analytic products out there that already include this data, so it's interesting for that reason, if nothing else. But the real value of the data isn't just in building up a KPI. Like, because once you have those measures that measure your real user metrics, essentially, you know, the performance that customers see in the wild, be it in remote locations or on different devices, like phones, for example, and whatnot. And again, performance.market_measure implements in pretty much all the browsers, though I do believe they're not on Safari on iOS yet, but they certainly are for Android and Windows. So once you've got that information, once you've got the KPI, once you've got the data, often you'll be asking yourself, well, okay, so it's long. Now I need to profile it and really get a sense of what's going on. And in this scenario, performance.mark and .measure are still very useful things. So just like you normally would when you profile, you start profiling the performance tool. And I'm going to run the scenario by pressing go. And I'm going to stop profiling. And that, of course, will collect all the data. So one of the first things you'll probably notice about a performance tool is they can be a bit overwhelming. You know, they show you a lot of data. You know, that data is valuable because it obviously helps you diagnose your performance problem and hopefully helps you resolve it. The downside is that it can be awfully confusing to figure out what's relevant to the scenario you're profiling. So like, for example, you can see along the top here, we have a timeline that's 1 second to 7 seconds, but I don't know, and I don't think anyone could really know if, you know, the scenario started at 1.2 seconds, or did it start at 3 seconds and end at 5.2? There's no way no human person could ever understand that. And that's another place where user marks and user measures come in to be super handy. You can see along this timeline, because the thing, the timeline you're doing by selecting like 2 seconds and 3 seconds is you're trying to select a range for which to look at the data from just that data range. So you try to reduce down the amount of stuff that you can see so that it makes it, you know, that you're only profiling the relevant things. And by using user marks, you can see along this timeline along the top that the marks are here. So you can see those are the two marks in the center, the end of one and the beginning of the other and the end of the other. So of course I could manually adjust them to match that, and there's a little snapping action. That's also a bit of a pain though. And if you look down in the profiling tool, what you'd notice is there's these user measures. And so each of the measures in your application will also be shown here along with its name. And so you can very clearly tell where the time is, but more importantly, you can do something like right click and then filter to event. And what that does is it eliminates, it scopes the timeline just to this particular scenario. So you can ignore everything else. All the call stacks, all the events will just be limited to things that are relevant to your particular scenario that you've captured with performance.mark and performance.measure. So for example, here you can see the click event, which is obviously relevant. It also has the nice highlighting. And then, you know, you can see I was generating a lot of strings, so there's quite a bit of garbage collection. But the more important thing is the call stacks. So here, this is where you see the sampled call stacks from, you know, your code executing. And that is the thing that, you know, you'd probably want to profile and look at in this particular scenario, because this scenario is all CPU script bound. For me, it's just an example, but hopefully you can see how you can use these features and you can translate them back into your application, your website, your web page, whatever you're building, even, you know, in hosted web apps or whatever it is. So hopefully by using performance.mark and performance.measure, you can collect KPIs for your site, but you can also use them to better profile your application. Okay, so in this demo, we'll be looking at using a function on the console called console_take_heap_snapshot. This function is there to help you as a developer tell the memory tool when to take a snapshot. It's simply called by your code. Now, one thing, of course, is you're calling this from your code, you should make sure that you check to see if it exists. For the sake of the demo, I have a really simple example that we're going to look at, and you know, I haven't checked to see if the console.take_heap_snapshot is defined. Obviously, you should, even better if you can compile out console APIs from your application so they don't ship. Because not all browsers support the same console APIs, certainly not when it comes to phones and things like that. So if you can find a solution to remove them, please, please, please remove anything that calls console.log or anything if, you know, from shipping applications. It won't have much of a perf impact, it's really about code cleanliness and making sure you don't get unfamiliar exceptions. Anyway, so in this particular example, I'm going to show you how you can use this feature with the memory tool to easily investigate a potential memory issue. So here, the setup of this demo is quite contrived, but you will probably relate to the scenario. We've got a DOM element, which is just this text div here. And what we're going to do, or what I'm going to do, is I'm going to parent it to window, so making it essentially reachable from global, window being the global object, and then I'm going to remove it from the DOM. So after this code executes, what will happen is that there will be an object, a DOM element, that's no longer in the DOM tree, so it can never render or participate in event handling, stuff like that, but it is reachable from JavaScript, so it's not going to be freed. It's not necessarily a leak, but it is never going to go away. And then I'm just taking a heap snapshot at that point in time. So you'd use this console take heap snapshot. So imagine in this scenario, I've discovered that after these few lines of code, there's an increase in memory. So this is a good point to take a heap snapshot. Many times, of course, when you're looking at using the memory tool, you'll be looking for a leak. Like when a value is you run a scenario, like you show a grid of data or whatever you're doing, and at the end of the scenario, the memory is higher than at the beginning of the scenario. So normally when you're using a tool, a memory snapshot tool, you'll take a snapshot as a baseline, you'll take a snapshot at the start of the scenario, and a snapshot at the end of the scenario, which works great. You know, here you are in the memory tool, let's start the memory tool. You start the memory tool, everything's chugging along, you press this button, take snapshots. The downside is that that can be difficult to coordinate with what's going on in your application. You know, the ability for you to move the mouse and move the focus to the tools in coordination with your application is the ability here to line up, making sure your memory snapshot is done at the right time. And that can be a bit tricky. So that's where console take heap snapshot is. It comes in and it takes a snapshot at a certain point in the code. So at that point, you know, you can get your memory snapshot. The interesting thing, and to be very technical here, is that the snapshot actually happens just after you've gone back to global. So in general rule, as a general rule, memory snapshots, like for example, if it was to happen just here, local data would be available, but locals, of course, will be dismissed as soon as the stack clears, which is going to happen, you know, practically instantaneous in this case. And so really, as soon as you say this command, what happens is as soon as the event loop finishes, so as soon as you go back to the platform and your JavaScript stops executing, snapshot happens. So that's still really powerful because, of course, everything in the web is event-driven. And it is a general rule, having data that's just, you know, during locally scoped stuff, so stuff that's in a closure or whatever, just because of the execution context, is not that relevant. So anyway, the memory tool, we've got it chugging along here. We're going to detach our scenario. We're going to run it. Well, we're going to quickly refresh the page because the thing didn't work. And we're going to try it again. And it worked. Yay! Okay, so as you can see here, we've got a snapshot. The nice thing from pressing that button, the nice thing here is also we've got this little information warning which is telling us the thing to look at in a snapshot. So we're going to click this link here, and you can see what it's done is it's highlighted something wrong with this particular identifier. So of course, if you zoomed in a bit, you can see that they're saying that the orphan, and you hover over and it's saying this is a detached DOM node. Now it's an information because we don't actually know if this is a leak. There's many good reasons to use detached DOM nodes. Libraries often use them, for example, to construct objects and templates and whatnot before attaching them to the DOM, the markup tree. So there's valid reasons to use this. It's up to you as a developer to decide if it's valid for your application. But once you've decided it's invalid, look at the object references below and you can see the paths back to global. And of course, JavaScript being a garbage collected world, what you have to do to remove objects is snip all the references back to a global root, or back to a root, and global is the root in this case. And then, of course, it'll be freed up when the garbage collection X runs. And so in this case, it's directly off global, which is window, so I just have to remove it from window by nulling it, delete, whatever. You can see for the other objects, like the document, these divs, their path is, of course, different, and they go up by a body via HTML to the document. So they're attached to the DOM. And you can also see that nice little DOM integration. So there was an example of using console take heap snapshot at the right point in your code so that you can collect a memory trace, and you must have the memory tool running for this to work. If the memory tool isn't running, then nothing will happen, which is great because, of course, if you forget to remove this from shipping code, you don't want to run snapshots on every customer because snapshots can take a while to run depending on how many thousands of objects you have. So it only works if the memory tool's open. But what it'll do is it'll take a snapshot at the right point in time for your application, which you can then use to diff or otherwise investigate your memory leak. Okay, so you've seen some great demos of how you can use the tools to profile your application. You've seen how you can use an API called console.time and timeend to profile and annotate two points in your code, so you can see a time in the console pretty quick with a sub-millisecond timer. You've seen how you can use performance.mark and performance.measure to time scenarios in your application that you can then collect and potentially upload to your backend to generate KPIs and things like that. And how you can also use them locally to filter down results so you can very accurately delineate scenarios. And lastly, you've seen how you can annotate your code with console.takeKeepSnapshot, so you can take snapshots at the right point in your time to get the best memory dumps. So where next? Well, this concludes this video, and I will say that do please follow us on Twitter at EdgeDevTools. We have tips that go out on that channel twice a week, and you can get nifty little gifts of things that are useful in the tools, like little shortcuts and things like that. And if you have any questions, do feel free to tweet out the team at EdgeDevTools. We're always happy to take questions and answer you and help you if you have any problems with Edge or the developer tools. And of course, feel free to go to User Voice. You can check out the link on the page, bit.ly/f12uservoice, and then you can vote on features. So if the tools are missing a feature for you, search for it on User Voice and vote for it. Your votes matter. We take it into consideration when we're evaluating what features to build in future versions of our product, so please go there. And lastly, if you want more documentation or you want some guides and links to other videos, please go to edgedev.tools and you'll be redirected to our MSDN Doc Center. And of course, you can always find me, Andy Stilland, at Andy Stilland on Twitter. And please feel free to reach out to me anytime. Otherwise, I hope you have a great time using the tools, and I hope you found this video informative.